Right now, coming your way at 8:04 even, is Max Goodman of Sports Illustrated. I had to talk a little bit about with the Yankees. And Max, thank you for giving us on this Monday night a couple of minutes of your time.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It's a pleasure.
Well, our pleasure, you know for sure. Now, are the Yankees, even though taking 2 out of 3, it would have been better for the sweep, but that wasn't going to happen, especially after game one. So they won 2 out of 3 from Boston. We know they're only 4 over .500. We know they've got the number of teams in front of them. We know they're behind also the two teams that right now lead in the wild card race. Is the season over for them?
No, I don't think the season's over at all. In fact, I think they have plenty of time to still make the postseason. The question is, what will they do at the trade deadline, and where will they land at the end of the season in terms of a wild card spot? Or I think the division is potentially out of reach with how good the Red Sox have looked this year and how good they look tonight. I mean, they're up big on the Blue Jays. The Yankees caught them at a good time with the rain and had a couple bounces go their way with this interesting roster that they've got going on right now. But I think that the season hangs in the balance in these next 2 weeks, potentially, as they figure out if they're buyers or sellers and make up some ground on Boston, playing Tampa Bay next week as well, mm-hmm. and then try to beat up on some not-so-good teams as they head into August.
Well, see, and that's an interesting point you just made there, because when they take on teams that they should control, they don't. And how many times have we seen, like, with the Detroit Tigers, and they get swept by them, and you know, they can win against some teams a little bit over 500 because now they have to do that. And maybe they're feeling a little bit better about themselves after taking 2 out of 3. But you make the great point, because a lot of the teams in front of them, the Torontos, the Bostons, these teams, they are going to be playing Tampa, and they're going to play Boston, and they're going to play Toronto. And then if they can hold their own and then some, there is a chance. 7 games is not 17 games out of first place. And certainly a sign, a good sign, a positive sign was Torres on Saturday and Sunday, finally with some power, finally hitting, what was it, home run number 4 and home run number 5. If he and Sanchez can hold up their end of the bargain, you get Urshela back, you get Judge back, you get Voit back, and some of the players to be named later who were basically helping the Yankees over the weekend. If they can get some of these, all of this together as one, The only real qualification here is, Max, that we just haven't seen much evidence that they're going to be putting on a run, even when the varsity is at full strength.
Sure. I think that this entire season has been a story of inconsistencies and players underperforming and the occasional ineptitude as well. And like you said, it's hard to really trust in this unit that they've got right now, let alone a group that's affected by a COVID outbreak and several injuries to go on a run. And so I thought that this series against Boston that they just wrapped up was the beginning of an incredible audition. And mm-hmm. they're trying to prove to Brian Cashman and Hal Steinbrenner that it's worth it for them to go out and maybe even exceed the luxury tax threshold to make this unit even better. Better than the expectation that's clearly not being fulfilled with this group right now. So, yes, if Glaber and Gary get going and Judge and Urshela come back from the COVID IL, Voit isn't on for too long, and they get a boost from, you know, the likes of Corey Kluber and Luis Severino, who knows what we'll get from them, it's still possible that this group can fulfill those championship expectations, especially if you add other players into the fold at the deadline. But again, like I said in my first comment, I think that these next 2 weeks are paramount, because if they don't make moves, you're relying on a group that hasn't performed through the first 3-4 months of the year to all of a sudden have a complete reversal down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Max Goodman of Sports Illustrated on the Yankees. So who might be available for a Brian Cashman to go out and get the luxury tax threshold notwithstanding?
Well, I think the two positions that would be the most important to address are an outfielder, preferably center field, preferably a left-handed hitter, and then starting pitching. You can never have enough pitching, especially if you're trying to go on a deep run in the postseason. I keep seeing Joey Gallo's name pop up. I know Starling Marte isn't a lefty from the Marlins, but Craig Mish, a reporter down there, reported yesterday that extension talks with Miami have completely ended between the Marlins and Marte. So maybe he'll be trading dugouts when the Yankees are down in Miami on the 30th. We'll see. Ketel Marte from Arizona would fit as well. I don't know if Baltimore would be willing to trade in the division with Cedric Mullins, an all-star center fielder. So adding someone to balance the lineup with such a righty-heavy group and someone that a team that's missed production from that position ever since Hicks went down with the season-ending injury, and they haven't gotten much from Gardner this year, that would be huge. And then from a starting pitching perspective, I mean, Jose Berríos from Minnesota would be an incredible addition. Mm-hmm. You could look at veterans and dominant players like Max Scherzer. But it all depends on how those other teams end up in the next couple of days and whether they're buyers or sellers or how much of a seller they are and those specific extension talks. It's a case-by-case basis. But who knows how much they're willing to spend from a prospect perspective as well, Steve. I mean, is it worth it to go all in and just make a wild card run versus, you know, holding on to some talent in the organization that could be producing for them in a couple of years?
What would you do regarding Stanton? Would you give him a glove and have him go out and play the outfield, especially when there have been? And LoCastro, after that great catch he made in the first inning, he had to leave in the second inning. They've had so many issues health-wise with outfielders. How about giving a glove to a $300 million ball player and see if he can catch a fly ball?
Yeah, I think you have to at a certain point. I mean, he's out there during batting practice pretty much every day, taking fly balls and ground balls as part of his pregame routine and part of his conditioning that he does. But the reason why they're apprehensive, I mean, he had an injury last year that he would have missed the beginning of the season with, I think it was a calf off the top of my head, but then it didn't factor in because of the COVID shutdown. That was from fielding during spring training. And he has all of these lower body injuries over the last couple of years. It's a risk to put him out there, as crazy as it is that we're talking about a professional athlete here. He hasn't proven in these last few years that he's capable of being durable. And he hasn't played in the outfield in a regular season game since, I think it was September of 2019. So it's been quite some time. But they may have to because, you know, players are dropping like flies. We'll see if Trey Amburgi, the guy they called up the other day, is down for a long time or not too much. It was announced as a cramp in his hamstring last night when he pulled up a little bit. But you mentioned LoCastro being down. They're running out of options. And by putting him in the outfield, it would open doors for Aaron Boone to have a little bit more flexibility with giving other guys days off and giving them a rest, but still having their bats in the lineup, something he hasn't been able to do for literally two full seasons.
Yeah, well, you know, he has no body fat. And I think also part of it is protecting him or coddling him, whichever word you want to use to begin with him just being a DH. And I think the only run he produced over the weekend against the Red Sox was on a force out, and a run came in to score. And he just strikes out all the time. His at-bats don't look very good. And he has to hold up his end of the bargain if we're seeing a renaissance with Torres and with Sanchez making contact. And by the way, how about Sanchez catching Cole and catching Cole in the rain and no major issues there, Max?
Yeah, I think the word that Boone used to describe that transition for them to work together again for, I think, the first time since opening day was seamless. And that's a good sign if you're a Gary Sanchez fan, you want him back there. I think that Kyle Higashioka is better than a lot of people give credit to him for in terms of his defense, and he has his moments on offense too. But yeah, I mean, down the stretch, like we saw in the postseason last year when this team wasn't comfortable having Sanchez back there. When, you know, Cole could pitch in the wild card game, and then who do you put back there when it's one game to define the rest of your season, if you even get to that point? So it's going to be important for this team to have Sanchez behind the plate. And that was a good sign, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and one I was going to say before I interrupted myself that with Stanton, maybe one of the reasons they don't, and not just because he hasn't played the outfield in a while, but also because he might get hurt running after a fly ball. He can pull a muscle, God forbid, a hamstring, the oblique, whatever it is. We know from swinging with obliques quads. And, I mean, he has no body fat on him, so maybe they don't want to see him hurt himself running after a fly ball in the gap.
Right, and I think the only reason that they would put him out there is if all of the preparation that they've been doing with him physically throughout this entire year finally gets to a point where they trust it, where they know it's a risk, but it's a calculated risk based on the issues with the roster and the lack of production and the injuries. But I think that we also need to recognize that Stanton, although he has been struggling these last couple days since the All-Star break, and the criticism is warranted, we are in New York, and with the amount of money that he's being paid, he should be producing the numbers that they saw him produce with the Marlins when he won an MVP. But he has been up there with one of the most consistent players on this team offensively. And you look at that stretch where he had that 12-game hitting streak at the end of April when he was hitting almost .500. That's what you can get from this player. But you got to keep him healthy, and you got to let him find his rhythm. And so the issue is he's got to be in the lineup every night getting those four at-bats a night and finding a groove with his unorthodox close stance and the way that he goes about his business every day with his unique routine. Because if you can get him as hot as he was during that stretch in April, during that stretch in the postseason last year, it takes your lineup to new heights.
Yeah. Okay. No, I understood. And let me ask you this also, because if the Yankees are taking on Boston or Toronto or Tampa, and it's a one-run lead for the Yankees come the ninth inning, you're Aaron Boone, you're Brian Cashman, you're the analytical staff, you're everybody involved. Do you go to Chapman for the save?
That's such a tough question. I think it was pretty telling last night when Aaron Boone was asked, because Aroldis Chapman did come in, but he was asked if it was a save situation, would he have gone to Chapman? And he said yes. I think that's telling as to where this team is at with Chapman. And he was speaking before the game on the field about how, you know, this is such a challenging part of his career, and he's really hungry to get back to the player that we're all accustomed to seeing him as. And I think it's still in there, and he's shown during certain parts of this rough stretch, certain at-bats and certain pitches where he's able to use that split finger that's so effective when you mix it in with the slider and the elite fastball that he has when he's locating it. But with the track record over these last couple of weeks, it's hard to go out there and trust him, right? So I think he has the next couple of months, if he's still on this roster and if they're in contention, to prove that he's their guy in an incredibly important and big spot down the stretch. But you also have to consider how good Chad Green has been and how consistent and how much trust you can have in him. And also Jonathan Loaisiga is coming back from the COVID IL. He tweeted today the airplane emoji with the Statue of Liberty emoji. So I think he's coming back to the team, and we may see him in the next few days once he clears protocols. And he's been incredible this year too. So you have those two guys that have really only had a couple of blips this entire year. If I'm Aaron Boone, I'm considering them a whole lot more, but I think you still go with Chapman as he's slowly working through whatever he's doing right now.
Yeah, and even last night, I mean, in a one-sided game, 9-1 already, with his command, with his control, he was a little bit wild. But he got through it. I mean, no harm, no foul, no major damage. But he didn't look as sharp as I'm sure the Yankees wanted to see him. That's for sure. And if I am in a game against one of those three teams, anybody, that it's a one-run game for the Yankees, you need to save, you need a save. I'm going to Chad Green, who has basically, for the most part, proven the trust that Aaron Boone and the Yankees have for this guy because, yes, he's had his moments, but who hasn't? But he is somebody you can trust to close out a game. He could open a game. He could come in the seventh inning, and you could trust him the eighth inning and certainly the ninth inning and save a game.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned that, what popped into my mind is the other side of the spectrum. You asked earlier who they might be trying to go out and get at the trade deadline. If, you know, the bleep hits the fan over the next couple of days, I think Chad Green might be your most valuable asset in terms of who you could try to get something back for. You look at the 2016 retool when they didn't end up making the playoffs and they traded Chapman and Andrew Miller mm-hmm. and got Gleyber Torres and Clint Frazier and Justus Sheffield in those two deals. You know, who do you have value on this roster that you would want to potentially deal but not take too many steps back? I think you could get a lot for Chad Green, but that would be the kind of move that if you're really blowing things up mm-hmm. because of how good he's been. And I think off the top of my head, he still has a little bit of control beyond this year too. So, I mean, we're talking about the Yankees, right? They're still going to be in contention after this year, even if they don't make the playoffs this year. So I wouldn't necessarily advise them to get rid of Chad Green because of how good he's been throughout his career in those different roles, like you were talking about, opener, closer, mm-hmm. setup man, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But he has been one of their most valuable players this year, that's for sure.
The silliest rumor that you hear, and it has been brought up, it has been written about, is the trading of Aaron Judge. And he basically is the face of the franchise. You can make the solid argument he's their best player and not only holding up his end of the bargain hitting-wise, but also as good a right fielder as you're going to find in the game of baseball.
Oh, absolutely. And I think something that hasn't been talked about enough this year is obviously he does go on the COVID IL, which is not ideal, and it's a non-baseball injury. But he was up there with DJ LeMahieu this entire year in terms of games played. After the narrative mm-hmm. these past couple of years of just how injury-prone he is and how he can't stay on the field, a similar conversation with Stanton, who did go on the IL earlier with the quad strain. So Judge didn't get enough credit through the first half with how consistent he was being in the lineup day in and day out, filling in center field, which is unprecedented with that underrated mm-hmm. defense that you were talking about. If they don't have him going forward, you know, we'll see if he comes back in the 10 days or so after he was placed on the COVID IL. And we'll get more updates on that, I'm sure, starting tomorrow from Aaron Boone. But if they don't have him in that lineup going forward for this year, it's going to be really hard to make up for that production. I mean, he's leading the team in basically every category mm-hmm. offensively. I personally don't think that they're going to trade him moving forward. I think that would be a mistake both and off the field. I mean, it's also telling. Jameson Taillon was in the Zoom room last night and someone asked about how different it is with all of these new guys on the roster. And he, you know, it was just a side remark, but it shows how big of an impact Judge has. You know, he said, you know, Judge is usually playing the music in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And he's always talking to us as a leader and a presence in there. You know, he's missed when he's not there in terms of his production, but also in terms of his presence in the locker room. He's the closest thing to Derek Jeter since Jeter wasn't here anymore, right? So I think that would be a mistake, but they could certainly get a lot for him, that's for sure.
No, I don't think anyone would doubt that. And you mentioned Taillon, who has, after some rough starts in the beginning, I mean, in his last four or five outings, he has been where you can trust him, giving him the ball to make another start, of course.
Oh, absolutely. Taillon has been magnificent in the month of July, at least. And he's shown signs throughout the year that he's kind of showing that form that he had in Pittsburgh. But we're also talking about a player that he pitched one inning in the last 2 years, I think mm-hmm. it was, with all the injuries that he's had and the back and everything. So for him to go out now and make these adjustments in terms of which pitches he's using, because this entire year has been full of adjustments for him. And his last three starts now, he's only given up two earned runs, and he's going out there and pitching deep into games too, something that we didn't see through the first couple of months of the year. You know, seven innings against Seattle, which was one of his best starts of the year, and then of course Last night, 5 1/3, he struggled a little bit at the end there, but only 4 hits and no runs allowed. And if you have a bullpen that's as reliable as the Yankees bullpen has been, you know, take Chapman out of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to get 5 or 6 out of him down the stretch and handing it off to Green, Loaisiga, I think you could even throw Lucas Litke in there or Zach Britton once he's able to, you know, find a rhythm since he just got back from the IL. That's all you can ask for in today's day and age with how starters don't, you know, usually go 7 or 8 innings as much as they did, you know, before my time. And then, of course, Gerrit Cole is going to give you back-to-back complete games, which is, you know, an incredible asset to have at the top of the rotation. But Tyone may be able to blossom now for the next couple of months if he's able to stay healthy and they don't burn him out with too many innings. Because, like I said, he didn't throw many innings in the last couple of years. But they would need him for sure if they want to make the playoffs.
And with or without the glue, the adjustments, whatever adjustments, of course, with the grip and the spin rate, even though Cole's spin rate may be a couple of revolutions per minute down, bottom line is he is still an ace. The 129 pitches, and you saw how in no uncertain terms he was telling Boone in the ninth inning, I'm going to finish what I started. And as animated as could be, you couldn't read his lips, but you knew he was letting Boone know what he wanted to do. And then he follows that up with what we saw on Saturday with the Boston Red Sox. Max, so you're saying it's not over for the New York Yankees, and a good chance they will try, at least right now, your thinking is that they will try to add instead of subtract.
Well, I just pulling up the schedule right here, you look at their next 2 weeks before the 30th when the deadline is. You know, these next two against the Phillies, it's a team that has struggled and has been inconsistent just like the Yankees, underperforming. And then you go to Boston for 4, and that's going to be a huge series because if you get swept up there, the morale could not be lower entering the rest of that stretch up until the deadline when you're going to Tampa Bay. This team has struggled quite a bit at Tropicana in the past. And then it's only one day in Miami when the trade deadline is actually happening. So that's 7 games right there against the teams in front of you in the division, teams that have beat up on you earlier in the year. It's 2 sides of the spectrum. You lose, you know, you lose 5 of 7 in that stretch. I don't know if I'm Cashman, I don't know if I'm going out and spending my prospects to try to a couple more pieces when it doesn't look like it's worth it, versus you take 5 of 7 when you've already won your last 3 series against Seattle, Houston, and Boston, 3 contenders. I think you could factor Seattle in there. They've been having a decent year. They're starting to show that they have the potential to contend down the road, but those next 3 series are paramount. And like I said at the very beginning, I think their season is going to be decided in that stretch. So yeah, right now I'd say I think they're starting to trend in the right direction because they're going to get some folks back, and you bolster that group even more with just a couple additions, guys that you know are going to help contribute and make this team even more of a. I think that's a must do. It just depends on the prospects that they'll have to give up.
Okay, and one final comment or two from you about what we will probably have next year and what we probably will not have next year regarding baseball in general. A universal DH, that seems to be the prevailing thought about what will happen with the National and American League, of course, for next year. And no runner, no ghost runner at second base to start the 10th inning. And no 7-inning doubleheaders. Give me your thoughts, Max.
Sure. I'll go with the middle one of those 3 first, because as soon as you mentioned that, I remember several months ago now, I think it was very early on in the season, right when fans were starting to get back at the ballpark, they were in extra innings, the Yankees were, and the runners were on second to start the innings. And I remember chants in the stadium, play real baseball. And I think that shows exactly what the consensus is from fans. I've heard from other reporters in the press box, their animosity towards it. I think that I'm pro universal DH as much as it goes against the traditions. I think that it can even the playing field, prevent some injuries. We've seen some pitchers go down that we don't get to see them do what they're so good at because of something that they don't work on in terms of, you know, swing a bat. Mm-hmm. I think that we should definitely get rid of the runner on second because it just changes the complexity of a game, and it would be a real shame if that happened in the postseason or when some team has their season on the line and you lead off the 10th inning with a base hit and it wins a game when it should be just a leadoff single. So they have to work out the rules with that. And then 7-inning doubleheaders, hey, it's nice from a reporter standpoint to not be at the ballpark too many hours. But it's also, you know, it's not baseball. You think of baseball, you think of 9 innings, 27 outs, right?
So Well, how is it, Max, that Madison Bumgarner throws a no-hitter and it doesn't count for the 7 innings, it doesn't count, and yet all the stats regarding that particular game do count? I mean, how is that making any sense?
It doesn't. It's not consistent. And if Gerrit Cole is going to be credited with a complete game when he pitches in a 7-inning game, how is that not the same thing as saying someone threw a no-hitter or a team threw a combined no-hitter if that was the regulation amount of innings in that game? So I think Major League Baseball and the commissioner and all parties involved, they've got a lot to figure out. And with the CBA coming and all the negotiations back and forth last year during the pandemic between the union and the league, I think we could see a lot of back and forth with those rules that have been implemented. And now we're wondering if they're going to stick around. But yeah, to go back to your question, I think I'm pro universal DH, but anti those other two, because it's just not baseball.
And the swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated, do you read that issue or do you just get it right away before everybody else gets it and look at the pictures?
I used to get the magazine when it was, you know, once a week.
And you don't?
For me to be working for this publication, but I'm just strictly on the digital side now.
I see.
So to tell you the complete truth, I didn't even know that the swimsuit edition was coming out. I saw it on Twitter this morning. So I'm going to have to see if I can potentially get my hands on that. And yeah, I mean, it's a tradition at SI. It's always a special thing that comes out. But the magazine in general, it still, you know, has a lot of it has a great reputation in the industry, I would say.
And you would be surprised how many people do admit they actually read the articles. Not just about the young women and where they're from and what they're doing and where they want to go with their lives and careers, but the bottom line is there are a number of very fascinating stories that always accompany the swimsuit issue of Sports Illustrated. Max, can't thank you enough for giving us a couple minutes of your time. A real pleasure, and stay safe and sound and healthy. Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Steve. You too. Hopefully I'll talk to you again soon.